horse has had, you know, 1,000 rides can be harder than one that's had 2 rides to train, because they've learned 1,000 times that this is the way I'm programmed. I go forward with anxiety, and I bend without balance and turn without balance, and this is the way I do it. And I've always learnt to run away from pressure and hunt release. So she's not even comfortable in moving her feet within pressure, because she's always been taught to hunt release.
Hello, welcome to Mark Langley's Horsemanship Podcast, a podcast helping people to understand their horses better, to provide solutions in a calm, connected way. I'm Jenny Barnes.
And I'm Mark Langley.
This week's podcast is all about leading. We're going to start off with a question from Nat Mark, who has a very nervous wild horse. And you've been helping her with her, just establishing some kind of a connection with her. She's had her for a few months and she's making some lovely progress. But when it comes to leading, she's finding that this nervous Brumby is creeping behind her and she can't use anything strong to move her over. She's wondering what she can do that's suitable for a super sensitive horse to work with leading.
Yeah, I was giving that question some thought, and I know why she's creeping behind you. You have worked on some connection and her sort of sniffing and feeling safe, and they sort of come into your bubble, and there's this sort of safety thing where they sort of latch onto us and they're with us, but they still can't handle any fast movements by us or pressures. It just becomes this nice place of not a lot of pressure, actually. So when they're close to us, there's not a lot of pressure. We kind of encourage that sometimes with horses where, you know, this is the safe place. And I'm not saying that you sort of went and did things that made her unsafe away from you. It just becomes like that with those really sensitive horses. So she's going to be in your pocket all the time, and there's no way around her getting used to a little bit more pressure without applying pressure. Okay, there's all these different ways you can sort of encourage her to be out of your space, but the problem with her, and the thing that you're going to come across over and over and over, is she's going to be frightened of pressure, and she will do anything in her, you know, what she'll do anything that's available to her to get away from pressure or stay out of conflict. So I don't want you to necessarily find a way that has no pressure in it to get her to walk away from you a bit, because as soon as somebody else comes, especially later on when you need someone to tend to her or something, when somebody else comes, she won't cope with any pressure and she'll be very needy and needy of you. And there's plenty of Brumbies that I've started over the years that that were okay with me working them, but as soon as a new person came in, they were very frightened, and we had to sort of address that. So if you can set boundaries, just remember, like, the two things that you want to establish with her is you're going to have to start establishing this with her. One, I'll come to you, don't come to me. I know it's very nice that they come up to us on their own terms, but they get to a stage that they don't want any conflict, so they meet us first. So, and I'm not saying you've done this, because I know you haven't, but in a lot of cases, some people kind of work a horse in a round yard or something, and they send their horse away a bit till their horse faces up and comes to them. So what that does to the horse is it tells them that if I want to avoid conflict, I come to you. Now, a very sensitive horse like you've got is going to be, well, if I come to you, and she hasn't had that, but still she'll come to you, so she doesn't have you coming to her. Now, coming to her means your energy's going towards her, and that's quite frightening. So what they do is they'll walk to us instead, and it seems like they're coming curious, and they come in and they sniff on us, but they're still avoiding us walking to them because they can't cope with a human walking towards them. So in what you're doing now, you're going to have to stop allowing her from coming to you if that's beating you going to her. And you have to start going to her and saying, I'm coming to you for connection, and we're connected when we're together, and this is fine. Don't always come to me, because she'll just follow you and stay in your pocket the whole time, and you won't be able to have her off away from your space. So maybe it's going to be hard because you don't want to break the connection, and you've worked real hard for that connection, and you're going to feel that's what's going to happen. But you're going to have to say to her now, when she starts walking to you, just bang your legs and do something just a little bit with her. You won't have to do a lot, just so she stops and goes, "What was that for?" And you go, "No, it wasn't for anything. I just didn't want you to come further." And then when she stops, so it's not too confronting to her, you just walk away somewhere. Just go and do something different. Break off her, walk and do something. Turn around, start to walk towards her again. If she starts to walk towards you to beat you walking towards her, just do something just that'll stop her for a second. And then you walk away and do something else. Just so she learns to stand again and process. And what I want you to sort of think about is, can she stand and process you as you're doing, approaching her and then walking away? And I want you to get to a stage that you can approach her to touch her and walk away, okay, not her approach you and always follow you, to avoid that approach. The more you can approach her, then you can start to introduce her to faster approach speeds and things like that. And it's those fast approach speeds that are going to help her when someone else has got to come into the equation, and she's going to get used to human pressure, okay? Human energy. Human energy is not a threat. Yeah, if she always and it's funny because you say to someone, "Your horse just caught you. That's what I wanted. That's lovely. It just came up to me." And I say, "Well, yeah, but it's not good if it's going to avoid everyone approaching it." Okay, and they get very good at that, approaching us so we don't approach them. So just add that into your leading or your catching, and that will have it. Believe it or not, it'll have a bit of a positive effect on her not being in your pocket when you lead her.
I was going to say that because it sounds like that it's quite a fragile state that this horse is in at the moment. Although it's nice the progress that's been made, but she's very highly fragile, and it's now we've got to step up so that we can actually help her. And so what you're asking to do, although it sounds contradictory, is actually going to help support that, and she's going to become closer to her for it.
Yes. Now, I've seen a lot of sensitive horses get way more connected with their owners because they just get a higher level of safety, but they get safe in themselves, not just safe in the person's pocket.
Fantastic.
So when you're leading her now, like, what'll happen is she'll be able to be stopped, and you can walk away from her, and that'll create distance. And then from that distance, you can pull on the halter again. So you might sort of, you know, just do that little, "Hey, stop for a second." It'll just shock her enough to say, "Stop following." You'll keep walking away a little bit, and then you'll pull on the rope a little bit and get her to take some steps. So you've got to put in place a way of stopping her and then being able to lead her again, stopping her and then being able to lead her again. And then on the lead rope, when you hang that lead rope, I want you to be able to walk up to her and touch her, and start to do it while she's got the lead rope on her from different distances. So you can walk up to her from 3 or 4 meters away and touch her, and she just stands still. And then if you want her to walk to you while you're walking to her, you pick up the lead rope. So what we got to be careful of and is a nervous horse, if we do connection work with it and we don't look at the holistic side of the connection, the whole process of empowering the horse within connection, we can actually depower them. But what ends up happening through connection work, if we don't look at it at the anxiety that a horse has, a horse's anxiety can actually control us. So you'll find she'll start to control the lesson more than you'll control it. Through her making good decisions, you'll reward her constantly for those good decisions, but then she'll be in control of the lesson. And then all of a sudden her anxiety will control the lesson. So she'll teach us, like those horses will teach us how to be soft and how to be quiet and how to do good things. But then all of a sudden when someone else comes, the horse is really unprepared for it.
That's some great specific tips in there. I hope they help, Nat. Mark's had a lot of time working with these wild horses, so he has had some amazing, amazing results. So, do take his advice on that. Staying with leading, the next question is from Janice, who has a blind horse. She was been watching the video Mark called Gaining a Connection, and she noticed that the horse in this video kept changing sides so that her focus eye was on the owner. Now, what Janice has noticed is that she's normally leading her horse on his blind side, but recently she's been leading him on the other eye, and he kept stopping and wouldn't continue walking unless she switched sides and walked on the other side of him. So she's tried a couple of times to go back onto the side of his blind eye, which is where she normally walks, leads him on, but this time he wouldn't move. She's wondering why he would have changed and isn't moving when she's obviously on a side that is causing him not to move.
I think I've got that one. If usually, if your horse has got a strong awareness with you with on the side they're blind versus their good eye. So if you're leading on the left-hand side and the left eye was blind or they didn't have a left eye, they have to have a pretty good awareness of you and where you are and know that you're there for you to be safe. So if they jump, they know that where you are. The benefit of having the good eye to the outside is so the horse can also process the environment on that side back behind that it can't see, okay? So technically you're filling in for the left side for the horse, if that was the left eye blind, I'm not going to sort of work out which one. So you're filling in for the left side and the horse is filling in for the right side in a sense. So it's, you're kind of in balance there. Now, you still have to do it on both sides because there's always times you have to work a horse from both sides, no matter if they've got one eye missing or not. And horses that are missing one eye, they tend to get used to working and not having vision down that side, and sometimes they'll overcompensate with a bit of a bend so they can get a bit more of a look at something. But it sounds like what's happened is everything's been going okay while you've been on the blind side and your horse has had its eye on the other side. But then all of a sudden the horse has wanted to freeze and stop and now is stopping while you're on the blind side. So when you're, so it's putting you or wanting to put you on the side that it can see you. Why that is I'm not completely sure, to be honest. I'll tell you some scenarios that I think could be the case. Is there's something in you it needs to understand or needs to keep you watching you. So whether it's something that you've been doing with it, maybe it's in training, you've opened it up in a way that it wasn't opened up before. Maybe it's processing a little bit differently, a little less shut down, maybe a little more aware. And maybe there's things in its training that it wants to process you a little bit more. So it's wanting you on that side. So there's something that's happening in its mind that needs to see you and process you. Why, I'm not completely sure. So maybe what I would sort of suggest is going in, just not when you're leading out in the paddock, going to some lessons where you just go and do some leading pass lessons on that side. Just see if there's any areas where you think your horse might be nervous and it might have just kind of got used to things when it was a bit shut down, but now it's opened up, those things are coming out. So do some leading on the side that it can see. See if there's any worries about different areas where you're working when it's moving past you and things like that that you can notice that you haven't maybe noticed before, or you sort of, you know, over time you sort of weren't really noticing it because everything was going okay. And just work on that side and see if there's any areas of nervousness with a person down that side, because maybe something's happened where he's nervous about something else in the environment and he needs you where he can see you because he's not too sure, okay? So a lot of horses, and this is just for everybody with horses that have one eye and have horses with two good eyes, is sometimes horses avoid putting you on the side that they're frightened of you. So if you walked up to a horse and it blocked you with and kept a right eye on you, then it didn't want the left eye on you. Some horses that have become comfortable with you on both eyes, they want you on one side, so their focus eye that focuses on their environment is free to make decisions. So there's two reasons why a horse will put you on one side. One is because they can't cope with you down that side. The other one is I can cope with you, but I need my focus eye on the other side so I can check things out just in case I've got to go somewhere. So they're the two reasons. So whether once upon a time when he could see, there was a stronger side of his brain that did certain things, and that's why he's swapping you over. But the one thing that you can fix is getting him very comfortable with you on that other side, on the eye side, but also do it on the side that he doesn't have an eye. just to go through some areas that there's maybe something that he's a bit frightened of you, something's happened and he remembers it, but you don't. Might have been going through a gate one day. He got a bump with a gate on that blind side. Now he's like, I'm frightened now. I need you on this side. You may not have even noticed it. It could have been something, just a little thing that happened that snuck up on him and spooked him a little. And now he's a bit cautious on that side that when he's nervous, he wants to know where you are. So I think that's probably what might be in there too. So, yeah, just think about those things. Work on both sides as if he's an even horse with two eyes. See if you can find any nervous points in him and then go back to, you know, going out for a walk and just really kind of focus on what he's trying to think about, if there are things he's trying to look at and that, and then you might be able to make your own decision.
Okay, and just an add-on to that one, she has been working on her leading and watching the video, she's noticed that there could be a bit of a contradiction in what she's doing, that she also wanted to run past you, which I think is quite a nice observation. It's nice to give some clarity on this one. She's noticed that you said that when you drop the lead rope, it should be a signal for the horse to stop. So this is when you're using feel. And so there's always feel. So you've got a quite distinct guide going through. And it dawned on her that when she's walking her horse, she often walks her horse with a loose lead rope beside her. So she's thinking that if she had a little bit of tension on the lead rope, it'd be a signal for him to keep moving. But also sometimes she's wondering if she should be leading him slightly. She should be leading him with her slightly in front of him and not beside him. And then she can have more control on whether that lead rope has got tension in it or not. Mm-hmm. So because she's been usually leading him from the side, the horse could be picking up on her movement. Is that the contradiction to, you know, what's happening with the rope?
Yeah, it is. It's a hard one because I contradict myself all the time, but I can get away with it on a clinic because I say to people, I'm going to contradict myself today, so I'm going to say something about this horse and then you'll see me with another horse and I'll say exactly the opposite. But I've got the microphone, so I'm allowed to contradict myself. So just as a joke. But actually what happens is I'll contradict myself because I'll be doing a lesson with a horse that I'm just want to work on their eyes. And, yes, they've got a holder on, but I'm not going to worry about the lead rope too much because they're not at that stage and they don't lead well enough to even worry about it. So I just get them to visually know where I am, create space for me, and just be more aware. And then I'll start talking to them about the lead rope, and that's the next level of clarity for them to know exactly where I'd like them in situations. So I've got a little rule when I'm working with horses. It might be at the mounting block. I step up on the mounting block. I lead my horse forward. The knot goes forward a bit. The horse goes forward. I push the knot backwards. The horse goes backwards. And then I put the knot in the middle and let it hang and the horse stops. And that's just something that they understand. When I'm leading in front of a horse, so some horses aren't ready to lead out in front of me because they make bad decisions and they're not aware enough of the person. They're not aware enough of, you know, they're not soft enough to lead cautiously. They'll make a bad leader because they're too anxious. Then they lead behind me a little bit, and I can actually tell them where to lead behind me by the length of the rope. So you're not constantly pulling on the horse to drag them along, but that rope picks up enough off the ground to feel that knot start to almost make a slightly forward feel, and that's when they go, that's the feel I follow. And if you just deliberately push your hand back and drop that knot, they'll feel that knot drop and stop, and you could almost still take some steps and they won't follow you, they'll follow the feel of the knot. So something when I've got a horse leading behind me, I'm very deliberate about is pushing the knot back a little to say stop now, so they really feel that knot change, and then you lift the knot a little forward to go forward, and that gives them that sort of little bit of there's a slack in the rope, but it's not a droopy rope where the knot's hanging, you know, plumb underneath their chin. But when you teach a horse to lead past you and go out on a straight line, that is when I'm behind their eye at their shoulder, and that's when the knot can hang and the horse can walk forward. So I make a little rule that when I ask you to go by and your eyes are past me and I want you to lead out and I want you to explore, obviously I can't control the knot from there. I can only control it in backward ways. I can't control it in forward ways. So that's when they know, oh, I'm allowed to explore and keep going, and I can offer a little cluck like to keep help them go forward and explore. But when they're behind me and when the rope is in front of them, as in going out in front of their nose, I always try and sort of make a little rule that I drop the knot if you stop, I draw the knot up if you go, and listen to the knot more than my body language. just to make them really clear for them where they are and that they're listening to that rope.
Okay, staying with leading and leading forward, this question comes from Larissa, who has done one of your clinics last year, and she's found that her horse is becoming along really well, following the lead and the rope and the reins into turns and backing up. However, he still gives some initial brace to any leading aid that's asking him to come straight forward or speeding up in a straight line. She's found that she can get that sort of soft flowing movement at the end of a session, but next time she's back in work with him, he's back to bracing again. So she's just wondering if you've got any ideas of how she can help him to soften and just flow forward like he has softened to turning and backing up.
Okay. Imagine these horses, there's specific horses that go through this, and I've had horses that are really you know, really easy to lead, teach to lead, and then, you know, within days they're just trotting up easy, and others that you've got to remind them every single day. There's one important thing you've got to think about. If you know that they've felt good after a session and you know that there's kind of that they've raised the level to a certain bar, how come we've got to keep stopping at the start again all the time, starting at the start? And it's the level of awareness and the mindsets you're in when you start the lesson. That's the biggest problem. So I said to someone riding, and this riding lesson will have the same sort of, I guess, intention, as I said, imagine that there's 10 werewolves on their way to your place and you've got 10 silver bullets, right? Are you going to waste your silver bullets just practicing for when the werewolves get there, or are you going to go get some other bullets and practice and keep the 10 silver bullets? Okay. So what that means is, don't put a feel on your horse if you know it's not going to listen. Or don't put the directional feel in leading if you know your horse is going to shut it out. That's wasting pressure. Now, there's plenty of young horses that you will do that with and it won't matter, but with certain horses, so when I get a horse that's giving me that good at the end of the session next day, dull response, I'll gently pick up the knot, and I watch its expression. And if I see that expression just going, I can't feel anything, then I'll say I've picked up the knot to a certain point, and I'll either bump it and say I just picked up the knot, or I'll maybe pop a flag on my boot and I'll say something's coming, hey, and it goes, what? And then I'll go back to quiet and I'll very gently pick up the knot again until I see that nervous system on the horse start to blink and become aware and say, oh, I'm aware and I'm going to lead. So what I mean by the silver bullet is when that knot just sort of pulls enough to get the horse to make that first step. Okay. And if you're lifting up that knot and saying, I need you to move, and nothing's happening, they're shutting out the feel of the rope, which means they're going to shut out the first step, which means you've wasted your silver bullet, and then you've got to drag on them or do something else. So basically you try and get the horse aware when you pick up the feel of the rope and see what mindset they're in, and don't try and ask them the question in the wrong mindset where they're shutting out. Try and put them in the right mindset. And then what I do is say, thanks for waking up. And I wouldn't even ask for a big step. I just ask for a little lean and a little tiny step and say, that's great. I just want you to get out of bed and be really awake when I pick up that feel. So I think the horse will just, you know, he'll get good at shutting out, that one day he'll shut out quite a lot of pressure because he knows he can. And if you think you've got to get to the end of the lesson to get him soft, it means that he's learning to block out pressure for the first half of the lesson. So basically say to him, I'm not going to let you block out pressure. I'm going to watch you closer and make sure that you're really in tune with that rope. And the saying that goes with that is, don't do a lot, expect a lot. And I think that's the biggest thing with horses that can be more cold-blooded, the horses that tend to shut out pressure very easily. Expect them to wake up really alert and do one tiny thing and go, there you go, that's all you had to do. Like, oh, geez, that's all I had to do. I just had to wake up and be bright and do something very small, because as soon as you sort of allow them to be dull and do five or six different things, like, you know, lead forward, back up, step over, that then you're just kind of grinding them and making them feel that this is not very good, this leading, this is kind of like really hard stuff, and then they lose interest.
Okay, next question comes from Jess, and she has a 13-year-old stock horse mare that you worked at one of your recent masterclasses. She's been working on that balanced flexion, but she's finding that on her offside, she's still very braced in her shoulder, and on her near side, she's starting to shut her eyes and either fall asleep or shut out. So she'd like to know, what does she need to do to get her to think into the bend and not shut out? She can move each front leg slightly, although it's clunky, the hind yield, and she can do the hind yield and stand still. So it's still the only exercise that enables her to cautiously step out and not march, but she's still spending more time in the flexed position than actually riding.
The hardest thing is, I know the man for everyone else, because, yeah, she was in the masterclass, so she would... So something I demonstrated in the masterclass to show everyone, and this goes back to your question as well, is if I just asked her to go forward with legs, she just kind of bings, destinates over there and takes hard forward steps like she's going somewhere else, and she's very anxious, very stiff. And then from a stiff walk, she's actually very hard to turn into a soft turn. So even if you wanted to kind of circle her until she engages with the rein, it's quite hard because she does, these kind of rushy turns to get through it. The one thing that works with her is the hindquarter yield, where you pick up on the indirect rein, and she has to step underneath herself in the turn. From a hard walk, I found that one works. So you can ask her out in a walk and then do your hindquarter yield till she softens and gets some soft movement in the hindquarter yield, and then you can just let her pour her out into the walk. If she marches, do the hindquarter yield and then pour out in the walk. So the hindquarter yield is going to entail her thinking to the rein that you're taking, that you're pulling. You pick up on the feel of the rein. She should flick an ear. She should let go of that sort of gazy thought, think into the rein, and then just step underneath by picking up that indirect rein that comes into your belly button and lifts up towards your chin. So that's that there is to help soften her from that hard walk, and I found that for her is a better one than opening the rein all the time. But the open rein is really important to get her to really soften and want to follow the rein, that leading with that thoughts and that inside front foot stepping into the turn, so she's thinking and stepping into a turn. So basically you're going to have to sort of not allow her to flex too long. So basically, if she just starts shutting her eyes and flexing around to your boot and just dulling out, you might have to lift on that rein and keep rocking it until she just breaks free, and then just don't worry about anything, just stop and then just do it again until she kind of breaks free, and just don't allow her to stay in there and just shut down. Otherwise, you can hold her there all day and she'll stay there. So you got to make it a little undesirable in there. So you got to keep putting that feel in there so she goes, well, I can't stay in here. And she'll kind of wobble and move her feet, and then you just release, and then you ask it again and again until she goes, oh, I might just try and think and move my feet. And because she's been taught, lateral flexion and be worried in movement, then she just bends and she knows how to just shut the feet down and bend. So you keep that pressure in there and keep lifting until she moves, and she'll get it. It won't take her, like, if you can give her a good turn, a good hindquarter, a good open rein turn and a good hindquarter yield and a good backup, she will find a soft walk and she won't destinate. It's just that in the past she's been really poorly trained in the reins to trust the rein, so it takes her longer to do it. A bit different, a horse has had, 1,000 rides can be harder than one that's had 2 rides to train, because they've learned 1,000 times that this is the way I'm programmed. I go forward with anxiety and I bend without balance and turn without balance. And this is the way I do it. And I've always learnt to run away from pressure and hunt release. So she's not even comfortable in moving her feet within pressure because she's always been taught to hunt release.
So if she's sitting there and, she's tried changing the position of the reins and making it, quite obvious, pulsing on the reins a little bit so that, she's expecting something to happen rather than just waiting. But she still goes into this flexed position, this frozen flexed position. How do you get yourself out of that? Do you pull on the other rein?
No, you can just stay in there and pull a bit more, lift it a bit more.
Right.
If she puts 2 hands on one rein and gives it one lift for a moment, she won't be able to keep her feet still, but you have to be super cautious when you do that, that they don't suddenly panic and just want to blow out and then tip over. So you sort of say to her that, and that's why you're riding a side pull, not a bit, when you're working on this stuff. You can actually kind of hold that rein and give it a lift till she actually tries to go, I can't stand, I need to move my feet. And then maybe what you can do on the ground is just do more bending and following. And like what you can do is like lead a pasture, send her out on a straight line, and then you might have the long 6 meter rope on her, let her go out 6 meters, and then the rope will be kind of down her side and you'll be nearly behind her, and then you just walk off in the new direction and she's got to do a tight U-turn to find you, and you just send them out on a long rope and then turn them back and send them out on a long rope and turn them back. And sometimes that's enough to get them to realize that the rein is a pathway. It's not just a suggestion to bend, it's a pathway, and she has to follow it and do a lot of those exercises. But if you commit in there, she will start to turn, and I've felt her to know that she will. I know you're just on a bit of a spot where you're stuck there, but I know that if you do it right and you get that right change in her, she will start to trust and follow that rein.
So maybe doing some groundwork might help get the right thoughts happening that might make more sense when she's under saddle.
That's right.
Okay, and the last question for today comes from Caitlin from Australia, and she has a horse who panics with pole pressure. I know this is a difficult one when you get a horse that has, they sort of can be quite stiff to pole pressure, and then they kind of, go up or something. So she's obviously very frightened of it. She'll raise her head, she'll go backwards if she feels the pole pressure from the halter. She fights against it. She's wondering if there's anything that she can do now to help her expose her to things so that she can get her past this. Obviously, it was a big issue for her recently travelling in the float, but she'd like to know how she can increase her tolerance and help her to respond safely to pole pressure when she does get worried.
I think, Caitlin, I think your horse might be one that might be a little older, that's probably had a few big pullbacks as well in the past, that's kind of went pear-shaped, and it can become quite chronic. And in your case, I think it is, because I saw, the photo you showed me when she had a panic, and she probably, one of those horses that could load okay, but touch her on the pole at any moment and then boom, okay. Travel okay, but touch her at any moment on the pole, and if she touches the pole or pressure touches her pole when she's nervous, then she's going to explode. So the biggest thing with any horse that has a chronic pullback, when they just shake their head, pull back and sort of go berserk, is test their back up. So for a few days, if you have to, maybe more than a few days, and you worked on this yourself, Caitlin, with your standard bred, and anyone that's got a freezy kind of sticky horse that doesn't flow in movement, especially reverse, you have to work on that first. So I had a chronic pullback horse in Queensland some time ago, and she had a broken wither from flipping over in some time in life, and so that horse, I didn't ask her to come forward until she unloaded those preloaded hindquarters and released and started to think backwards. So I just got my flag in front of her and I just shook it a little until she braced, and then she'd just free up and back a bit, and then I'd do it again and again until I could walk and shake the flag a bit and she could free up. And as soon as I shook the flag, as that head went to go up, she go, "Oh, no, I can free up the feet and move backwards." And when I saw her backing in a nice two-beat backward rhythm where she's floating backwards and the head came down and she was like had flow, and as I say, for some people that might take you 3 or 4 days to get that horse just, and that's just an eye stimulant, like a bit of a worry. So the flag goes up, you worry them, their eyes open up. And a lot of horses that pull back, their eyes open up, their body locks up, though they want to go back over backwards or something, but you don't put any pole pressure on them at all. So when their body locks up and their head goes up and it looks like their body's preloaded to do something quite dangerous, like rear or run backwards in a really awkward way or jump out to the side, don't put any pole pressure on them. Wait till they like spook the eyes up a bit. They go, "Oh, I'm not sure." And then let them find the backup. And you just keep doing that until that whole rigid kind of preload hindquarter disappears and turns into a soft backward thought where the horse goes, "Oh, I can just move away from danger. I don't have to explode like I'm in a trap." And it's because they've not been able to back up properly, then they've been trapped and they didn't know how to come forward properly, that all of a sudden every time they get a spook, they just lock up like something's going to go wrong, because they're like preparing for that trap a little bit. So if you don't trap their head and you get them to find comfortable backward movement, then they can withdraw from danger. So that means all the little things around them, they become less paranoid about, because their mind is mobile because they have a body that can support a withdrawal softly without having to explode. So if you were sitting in a wheelchair tied with your hands tied up in a chair, and then someone came in or there was a snake near you, you'd be like, ooh, like I'm really, really scared. But if you saw a snake at a distance, you'd just step away from it and go, oh, it doesn't bother me because I can always walk away from it if it's not too close to me. So it's the same with the horses. So teach them to withdraw from dangers, the most important thing before you put the pole pressure back on them. So basically that also can come in her step and a hind quarter over as well, but I wouldn't go driving those hind feet around with the flag. I'd just try and just, if she wants to step off a little, but it's not driving them like people, this will seem like driving pressure, but it's just shaking a little spook until the horse releases and withdraw. And I say, once she's got a really good backup, then what you do is you very gently, you do what you did to get that nice backup and she's backing, and then you very gently just take up on the knot and just see what her first reaction is to that pole pressure once she knows how to loosen the body and back up. You'll find that it's going to be a lot better than it was from a soft backup than just to push the head up, okay? And then you put pole pressure on and just gently wait on her. If she runs backwards, she might run backwards differently than try and flip out, or she just starts to walk into it. But just wait with it until she kind of takes a step forward, okay? So really good backup, and then just gently catch it with pole pressure at a distance with the rope. But be mindful to go, be mindful to let her off a little if it looks like you're going to flip her over. She's still quite chronic. But usually that backup will help her come forward a little bit better. If she just walks backwards, just keep an even pressure on it and walk with her until she does something different. If she does happen to step up in the rope, let her off a little until she's on the way back down, as in she rears up a bit. And when she's on the way back down, step sort of a little bit sideways to her eye, and on the way back down, pull the rope so she comes in towards you a little bit, and then just stop and then just go again and keep doing that. And when she just starts to get a little bit better at stepping forward into that pressure, then you can go into closer contact with your hand. But I wouldn't recommend close contact on her straight away. I would at a distance work her back into the, so she catches the pressure softly and comes forward. Don't catch her with the pressure. Let her feel like she's caught it a little bit from that backup. And you'll find that she'll start to learn to come forward and not panic as much. And on a really, really chronic horse, do it over a longer period. Don't try and get it all done in one or two lessons. And you'll find that after walking forward in that rope, and then you get closer with the rope closer, and then you can start to do head lowering while she's walking forward, head lowering while she's backing up, back up to forward and lower the head as you come into forward, you know, so she lowers her head and moves her feet as well. And that's just how you, and then do heaps of that as well. And then you'll get to a stage that doesn't matter where you put that rope, she'll follow it. And that's the same with that little horse with the broken wither. I can hang the rope over in a 1.8 rail and pull her nose up to it, and drag the rope along the rail, and she'd have her nose up in the air and just follow the rope wherever it went, because she realised that her feet were free, her mind were free, she can follow it, and she will. And she started to get a lot better at that.
That's it for this week. That's all we've got time for the moment. We'll be back next week with more questions for Mark. And if you're in Adelaide, don't forget you can catch Mark at his masterclass on the 26th. Of May. That's coming up for you, and it's a great day if you can manage to get to it. Thanks for all the questions that have come through from members of Mark Langley Online Horsemanship. It's out there for anyone to take a look. We do have a trial that's free for you for 7 days. If it interests you, you get access to all of his training videos on that online subscription. Thanks so much, Mark. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you, Jenny. Thank you, everybody.
You've been listening to Australia's very own Mark Langley, a horseman with many insights from his decades of dabbling. Jump online to keep learning. marklangley.com.au